can be one. Many stones to form an arch, singly none, and by union what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill, singly none, step by step the
This is John Quinlan. And this is Forward Forum. Welcome to a very special program tonight. As that intro to by Sweet Honey in the Rock is alluding to, we're going to be talking about a very important march tonight, the Selma to Montgomery March, which took place back in 1965. And as listeners to this show know, there's been a very powerful bridge that's been built between Madison and Selma, Alabama, where the march took place, and the home of a remarkable institution called the National Voting Rights Museum and Institute. In just a few minutes, we're very privileged to be speaking with the founder of that great museum, which is a monument to the hundreds of unsung heroines and heroes who were a part of the Black Civil Rights struggle. And her name is Joanne Bland. Again, longtime listeners know that just a little over a year ago, this program was down in Selma, Alabama, where we did a special broadcast live from the National Voting Rights Museum. It was just an incredible, life-changing experience for myself, for my friend Reverend Daryl Ritchie from James Reeb Unitarian Universalist Church, and as we soon discovered, for dozens of UW students who've made that same trek over the years. There is a wonderful relationship that's formed between UW-Madison students, undergrads, graduate students, and others who've gone down and done service during their spring break or as part of internships. And this, again, this beautiful grassroots museum, which depicts ordinary people's contributions to the Black Civil Rights Movement. Is built in large part because of contributions that Madison people have made. There's also an accompanying museum that that talks about themes of slavery. It's an experiential museum, and we'll tell you a little bit more about how that manifests as we get further into our interview with Joanne Bland. So shortly, again, we'll have Joanne Bland on the phone from Selma, Alabama. We're also pleased to have some guests from the UW-Madison who participated in this experience. Sue Zeski was a faculty advisor. Sue is the associate chair of the Communication Arts Department, and she's journeyed down there at least once, I think, if not more times now. And we're also hope to be speaking with four students, Charles Hughes, Mobilaji Falomo, Alan Pietrovich, and Ginny Camp, who also shared in that experience. But first, we wanted to make sure to get word out about another important way that all of you can be involved in social justice work right here in Wisconsin. And on the line, we have our good friend Stacey Harborough, who's going to be talking about an activist convention that's coming up here in Madison in just a little bit. Stacey, welcome to Forward Forum.
John, thanks for having me on. I've been sick in bed all weekend, so I'm sorry if I don't sound like myself.
It's amazing how well you can sound like yourself despite that. Hey, Stacey.
I'm trying to rock this like Demi Moore scratchy voice thing. We'll see how long it lasts. If I keep drinking this tea, maybe it'll go away by tomorrow. But thank you so much for having me on the air.
Well, lucky
sounds
this
like
is
a great show.
This is the week of the short interview, so next week we'll just hope you're back on your feet. And I know you've been working overtime to get this terrific conference off the ground. And if you could just give us maybe just a little bit of an overview about what you're hoping to have happen. And that's
sure.
Coming up on November 17th?
November 17th. It's going to be here in Madison at the Pyle Center on the UW campus. So all of your listeners should come. You don't have to be a card-carrying member of the ACLU, although it's a great time to join, of course. But I'm really excited for this conference because we have some really amazing speakers and some cool panels that are going to be happening. And it's going to really cover a pretty broad spectrum of civil liberties issues that are going on right now nationally and in our states. On a federal level, we've got two great speakers. One guy is named Tim Sparapani. He's originally from Stevens Point, but he's now the ACLU's national expert on all of these federal abuse of power issues, like domestic surveillance, you know, wireless wiretapping, torture, Guantanamo. And he's going to be talking to us about the Don't Wait for 08 ACLU campaign for us to hold our elected leaders accountable for all of these abuse of power issues. And so he's going to come and give us the update on that. And then Kate Stewart is a professional pollster, and she has just finished doing some focus groups with the likely voters in New Hampshire and Iowa about civil liberties issues. And so she's going to come and share her findings on that and give us a little bit of a look at the tea leaves for the civil liberties forecast in the next elections and what's going to be important there.
Okay. And I mean, and this is at base a place where folks who want to know how to get involved are going to kind of get some sense of what the options are out there and a little basic training to that extent, too. Is that right?
Exactly. We're hoping that there'll be some workshops that are going to be your boot camp, you know, for activism. This is our activist conference.
Yeah, I'm the one who wandered
like
us.
A lobby day.
I guess I'm the one who wandered us into military analogy. Sorry about that. But yeah, okay.
That's okay. I'll pick it up.
Boot camp for the foot soldiers of our efforts.
Really
sure.
Workshops just on that too.
Right.
There's going to be one really exciting one that one of our staff people who works with youth in Milwaukee is going to do, and it's going to be one on street theater and guerrilla theater for social change. And you might think, you know, that ACLU, you know, we're usually doing activism with the briefcases in the courtrooms. You know, what does street theater have to do with the ACLU? But he's going to be giving some really down-to-earth, everyday tools to inspire activists to get out there and get creative, that we can do more than just, you know, calling our representatives and writing letters, that we can really use our personalities and our creativity to get involved. And we've got another one that's going to be about digital activism, about how young people are using MySpace and Facebook and email and text messages on their phones to rally their friends around an issue and get the word out. So, there's definitely going to be some substantial, like, how-to workshops, in addition to some of the more, you know, updates about important issues, like what are the, you know, legal ramifications of the ban on same-sex marriages in our Constitution that was written at the last election. And also more information about voting rights as we look forward to 2008. So there's going to be a lot of really good information to be shared with folks at this conference. And it's going to be a cheap day. You know, it's $25, covers your lunch, and a whole day of really great activism. So we hope that that y'all will join us.
Okay. Well, and as you mentioned, the amendment campaign, I'm looking forward to that one. And as you know, the two of us are working together on that. So we're hoping to gather up a good panel of activists and legal experts and kind of show all the different ways that hopefully we can have a positive impact as we move forward with LGBT rights in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, can you give us a sense of how people can find out more?
Well, you can give my office a call. And do you mind if I give my phone number on the air?
No, okay? Please do. It's...
Sure. The office phone number here is with the local area code 608-469-5540. You can give me a call, leave me a message. I'll get back to you and let you know more about how you can sign up. Or you could go to our website, which is www.aclu-wi.org/activist. You can find us also on our homepage there, and you can just sign up right online, pay online, and all that kind of stuff. And registration is still open, so we definitely welcome folks from Dane County to come and join us in our backyard here for a good day of activism.
Okay, Stacey Harborough, we sure appreciate it. As we mentioned, you will be with us for at least part of an hour next week, and we'll have a chance to flesh this out a little bit more and perhaps speak to some of the folks who are going to be involved at the conference. So we look forward to that as well.
I look forward to that conversation as well, John.
All right, Stacey, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, as we move into our next hour again with Joanne Bland, again, we want to let you all know that there is an opportunity coming up next weekend to meet Ms. Bland, and that's happening at the James Reeb Unitarian Universalist congregation, which is just behind East High School on that little piece of Johnson Street that kind of juts diagonally from Packers Avenue out toward East Wash. And that will begin with a potluck just a little afternoon when the service ends, the 11 o'clock service ends there, and then presentation beginning about 1. Joanne's got a packed schedule visiting with UW-Madison students, going down to Blake College, and with a variety of folks in the community and elsewhere. But that's the public opportunity for you to hear her powerful story. And as we lead into Joanne, I just wanted to play a little bit of a song that you all have heard here before, but it's got some special meanings here when we're talking about Joanne and her history in the civil rights movement.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom? Or march that picket line. Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
You love. Hey, Joanne, are you there?
Yes, John, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. We wanted to play that. I don't know if you got to hear that.
Have you been to jail for justice?
Yeah, and I know you have, so we thought that was a good way to get started off here. So hey, thank you so much for joining us. I guess it's been almost a year now since we've had you on the show, we were down in Selma, and always a great pleasure. I was telling folks, there's this chance to come and get to know you and hear the story that you have, and again, to help us with this this bridge we're trying to build between Madison and Selma. It's a bridge that's already had some wonderful aspects to it in terms of the UW-Madison and some things in the community, but we're really hoping to build on that community part. And you know, as we get started here, I did want to, if I could, come back to you, and you just have a very powerful way, once we let you go, of kind of telling the whole story behind the Selma to Montgomery March and the things that led to the creation of the museum and all of that. But yeah, do you have some reflections just on, you know, on kind of what this Madison connection has meant over the years?
It's been amazing. I've been coming, I don't know how many years, to Madison. Stephanie North came to Selma for a jubilee, which is the anniversary celebration that we have this year. Each year is a commemoration and celebration, a commemoration of the fight for the right to vote and celebration of the attainment. But Stephanie came one year, and she brought kids down, and that following jubilee she came, and when she went back, she called me. She said, "Miss Bland, can you come to Madison? We need to touch people." And I said, "Sure, have ticket, we'll travel." And she said, "Well, get you all the details." And when I got to Madison, I met such amazing people. And she's going to hate me for this, and I'm going to give her a big hug when I get there. One of the people that I met that remained special, and you might say, how is she special if you forgot her name, belongs to James Reeb, the Unitarian Church. And she came to, I think it was Darryl, Pastor Darryl had something at his church. And she came, and the next day she took me to lunch, and we went what we call kitchen shopping. We didn't buy a darn thing, I promise you. We just went looking at how we wanted our kitchens to look. Uh-huh. And I hope I see her while I'm there, because of that memory of that day that I spent with her is still special. But Madison, UW-Madison, comes down at least once a year. And they do amazing work here. I'm not talking about just coming and learn this history. They get in the trenches. They really work. They work in the communities. And an offshoot of our other museum, the Slavery Museum, would not be open today without them. I don't care what anyone says. They went in and did all the grunt work. That building had not been renovated since the 40s. And they went in, and when they came out, all we had to do was start the work to make it a museum. It was just awesome. I can't even thank all the people who really, really helped. all the students who came down, and each one was special. And I hope I made them feel special, because they really, really were. We really appreciate that here at the museum, and I'd like to keep that going. We still refuse to take a lot of monies that come with strength.
Yeah.
Because we feel that if we made this history, we're the people who to tell this history. You're extremely fortunate that we're still alive. Most history, the people are gone.
Yeah.
But this history, we're here. We're here, and who better to get the history from than the people who made it? And that Wisconsin connection has helped us to keep it alive.
You know, I think I've told you this, but through the African American Studies classes I've had a chance to take this last year since I was down there.
Is that Christina?
With Christina Green, right?
Oh, I love her.
Oh, well, I hope she's listening tonight. And I would definitely see if we can. You're going to have a chance to see her at least once, if not a couple of times during the weekend when you're here.
Oh, great, great.
But you know, one of the things that we discovered along the way was, I think it was Fannie Lou Hamer who was doing some work in rural Mississippi. And that had a regular, this bridge was built between folks in Madison, Milwaukee, even further upstate like Green Bay, in terms of financial support, volunteers coming down, helping her. You know, and of course, you take it back to the Underground Railroad and other things. You know, it's great to think that we can carry on that tradition and continue for folks in a northern state that some folks might say, well, hey, you know, you're way away from this history, but hey, this is our history too, isn't it?
That's very important. The South was so far behind in basic human rights that each gain we made during what we term the civil rights movement brought us a long, long way. The problem was we had so far to go, that we were so tremendously far behind, that even the gains we made, which were quite accomplishments, we're not where we need to be.
Yeah.
We're not where we need to be, to put it plainly, and that it's going to take that same type of commitment, that same support to get us where we need to be. Selma has progressed tremendously, but it seemed that Selma progressed slower than the rest of the country.
Because it was still about 2000 when you finally elected a black mayor after many years of trying, right?
1999, he took office in 2000.
Despite being in a majority there, yeah.
We had the same mayor for 36 years that we had in 2000. I'm sorry, in 1999.
Yeah.
That we had in 1965. And it would seem as though that Selma would have been the forerunner for change, but it was not. It was not. That same power that oppressed us in the 60s was still in power. And until we could infiltrate the power, we couldn't make any change at all. So we're like new babes now. Our current mayor, James Perkins Jr., has done an excellent job. I agree with him, but 80% of the time, which is pretty good.
That's right.
For a politician. I agree with him 80% of the time. The rest of the time, the other 20%, I'm up in his face because I feel like my one vote elected him. If more people in America put that importance on their votes, we'll have some real change instead of this minute change we have that's tentative and sometimes taken away.
Well, you know, as you've alluded to, and I learned so much from you and Selma and have since then, and then again through these classes, you know, I think people tend to look at things as up, down, you know, yes, no, you know, mold in terms of, you know, for example, have things really changed or not? Like you said, I think the more complicated reality is here. You know, there was so far to go, you know, from the era of fear and lynchings and the KKK and intimidation. And, you know, in 1965, before you all did this march and did everything, I think you were telling me maybe 2% of the black citizens were registered to vote in a black majority county. You know, so we had so far to come. But in some ways, what happens over the years is the folks who want to keep other people down, have just found new ways, new tools to use to keep people from voting and from people from having a voice. And so this is ongoing work.
It's funny you should say that. It reminds me of my dad. I lost my dad in 2000, but around 96, my dad asked me, he said, what is racial profiling? And I explained it to him to the best of my ability. I think something had happened in New Jersey, and young men had been shot riding in a Mercedes or something, and they were just good kids, and they hadn't done anything, but it was racial profiling. And it made the news, and it was all over CNN, da-da-da-da. And my daddy had been watching it. And he asked me, he said, baby, it's racial profiling. What is it talking about? And I said, I explained it to him. And my daddy just fell back on the sofa and just started laughing, John. I couldn't believe he laughed. I thought he had lost his mind. I said, Daddy, that's not funny. And he said, it's funny to me. He said, when I was growing up, it was a way of life.
Yeah.
And I thought about it that we have the same issues. If you really break it down, we have the same issues. We just have newer names for them.
Yeah.
We keep renaming the same stuff. So we're doing something drastically wrong. If we can't get rid of racial profiling, was in my dad's life. And my dad was 76, about 95.
Yeah.
Okay. If it was there when he was young and it's here now, what are we doing wrong?
Absolutely. Joanne, we're up against our first break here, but when we come back again, if you could tell us this inspiring story that I know you shared so many other times before.
Where do I do it now, John? Will I have to do it when I get to Wisconsin? They're going to have to come and see me.
You want to do it that way? That's fine. We got plenty to talk about. So, but at any rate, we got a break for just a little bit, and we do invite folks to join in our conversation. 321-1670 or *123. For U.S. cellular phone users, toll-free, or 877-867-1670 if you're calling from further afield. Once again, 321-1670, which is also the number that our students who are en route here right now can call, and we'll come down and get them as soon as they arrive here. And, again, we're speaking with Joanne Bland. She will be here in Madison and full schedule, but a major public event, a chance for you all to meet her. Coming up at James Reeb Unitarian Universalist Church, 2146 East Johnson. That's coming up at noon a week from today, Sunday the 11th, and then presentation to follow about 1 o'clock. Again, as Joanne said, that's your chance to hear the real inside scoop and what happened back when. But we hope you also join us tonight. We'll be talking about this for the next couple of hours, and Joanne will have you stay on as long as you're able, but we want you to at least overlap a little bit with the students. So.
Okay, remember, I leave in the morning.
I know you do.
I do want to talk to my baby, so.
We'll make sure that we meet you halfway then. All right. And this is Forward Forum here on Madison 1670 The Pulse. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Pulse.
And this is John Quinlan, again, back here on Forward Forum with our guest, Joanne Bland. Joanne joins us from down in Selma, Alabama. She's going to be traveling up this way in about a week. Joanne is the founder of the National Voting Rights Museum and Institute and has been active in the civil rights struggle for as long as she has been around. And we mean that in every sense of the word, because I think it was back when you were about 8 years old, Joanne, when you first met Dr. King. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, the first time I saw him, it may have been about 8 when I met him.
Yeah.
Just met him. But when you guys talk about meeting Dr. King, it was different when you were a child because Dr. King was a child's dream. He would always, even when the ministers and the deacons would try to shoo us away, he would stop them. He would stop them and say, "No, let them come." And we would just rush in, and after the first time, we knew he was going to do it, so we would always burst up in the meetings. always had a peppermint. And when Dr. King asked you, so how you been doing, you really wanted to tell him. You know, when he asked about school, you really wanted to tell him how you were doing in school. And I remember his hands. His hands were the softest hands I had ever felt in my life. I loved my dad with all my heart. He was probably my favorite person in the whole wide world. He understood me. He knew what to say, da-da-da-da. But my dad drove cab, and he drove all day long, so his hands were not soft. My grandmother worked in the homes of the people who were trying to oppress us, and her hands were not exactly soft either. Dr. King's hands were always so soft, and I didn't realize, we used to talk about that as a kid, about it, his hands being so soft and how good they felt. And after, when I got old, I realized, well, they should have been soft. It's not like he did manual labor, you know. Mm-hmm. His labor was just as intense. It just was not hand intensive.
Oh, just as a pastor's kid, I can testify to that. That's what minister faces, or what Dr. King faced, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I think, you know, those of us who visit Selma and the museum have a chance to get to know you, we come away from is, of course, to understand that the movement is much greater than the folks that we tend to read about in the history books, including Dr. King and the colleagues. But it isn't a matter of one or the other, you know, as you're evoking, too. You know, Dr. King was this powerful leader. And of course, we remember his oratory, remember his prescient vision, you know, as we heard in that speech just the night before he died and all the other things. But he was a people person. He was a community organizer extraordinaire. He knew how to take a room of people that were probably all over the map in terms of their positions. And he could get them to come to consensus and get them to work together.
Exactly. Exactly. My involvement probably came from my grandmother. Not probably. I know came from my grandmother, Sylvia Johnson, who we lost in 1972. And I don't know if at the time I really appreciated who grandmother was, who and the things that she did to shape my life. And then I woke up 40 years later, and I am grandma, you know.
Mm.
But my grandma, as I called her, took me to my very first mass meeting. I grew up at the feet of the history makers, the adults who tried to strategize on how they was going to get the right to vote. I grew up during a generation of children who were seen and not heard, and we had to go to the meetings of the Dallas County Voters League, which, by the way, was formed in the 1930s when the people who write our history talk about 1965. Some may start at 1963 and go up, but the Dallas County Voters League here in Selma began in the 1930s, and it was formed by Sam and Aurelia Boynton. And my grandmother was a member of the Dallas County Voters League, so she would take us. During that time, wherever your mama went, you went. And my mom died when I was a baby, and Grandma came to stay with us to rear us, and when she joined the league, we had to go to. So, and we had to sit quietly while they talked. You couldn't go outside and play. You didn't do anything but just sit there and listen, and that's what I did. And just like our children learn the songs from the radio or the MP3 player or whatever they use now, I learned movement, but I didn't know I was learning movement. And I thought it was a normal life. I had a happy childhood. I did most of the things that most poor children did anyway.
Well, you know, we've done some great shows in community organizing. When there was someone who said across me a couple months ago, he started community organizing in Guatemala, and he also said pretty much the same thing. It was a way of life.
It was a way of life.
Depending on where you grow up, boy, you know, that's the way that you immerse yourself in things.
Exactly. In fact, it was only when I joined the Army in, like, 1980, and... Don't ask. I don't even want to talk about that period in my life. It wasn't all that bad, but I still can't see defending the country. But I'll talk about that. That's another subject.
Sure.
But I joined the Army, and I was in France. One of my dreams, I'm an avid reader. I'm grandmother, fostered by that same grandmother that read. You had to read all the time. She would feed us a heavy lunch in the summertime and then give you a book and say, go read this book. And I was maybe 12 years old before I knew my grandmother couldn't read or write, but she made us read all the time, right? One of my dreams was to go to this, to do the things that was in my books that I read. Like go to Paris and sit at a sidewalk cafe with the Eiffel Tower in my back with someone I love dearly.
Uh-huh.
And I sat there, and my dream came true.
Wow.
The Army afforded that. We were sitting there, and the couple at the table before heard us talking, and they said, what the lady asked, she said, "Are you from America?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Where?" And I said, "Selma, Alabama." And she said, "Selma, the bridge."
She knew, huh?
I said, "Well, you know about the bridge."
Wow.
Because, you know, locals call it the bridge. To me, you, John, would have said the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Sure.
But she said the bridge. "Well, you know about the bridge. You've been to Selma." And she said, "No." She said, "That history." And I said, "That history? Oh, my God." And I knew every time that I changed the duty station and I said I was from Selma, people would either say something negative about racism or they would ask me to talk about that. So when I came home, and when I got out of the Army and I came home, by then I had an appreciation for that participation. It didn't come, you know, while we're doing it. You didn't think you were making history. I didn't think 40-some years later I'd be on a radio interview talking about what I did when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
That my life was not that important. But when I began to realize it, I met a friend, a lady named Rose Sanders. And she had started an organization called the 21st Century Youth Leadership Project. And it taught black children leadership. And with that, she said, "Ann, tell your story." Ann is my hood name. You can't call me that. She said, "Ann, tell them about growing up during the movement."
Yeah.
And I found myself recounting this story over and over and over. And the children would use tactics that worked to organize, to change things in Selma. And I was like, "Wow, this is awesome." Hearing it. Then one day she said, "Ann, we should open a museum." And I thought she had lost her mind. I'm a legal secretary, and she's an attorney. You know, we do law.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean factual law. So she says, she's lost her mind. But she's the kind of person that when her idea is put on the table, You pick it up and you run with it like it's your idea. And before I knew it, we had the museum. And I've seen tens of thousands of children to relate those memories of the movement in the 60s. And I've gotten tens of thousands of letters of how they use that same information to make change in their communities. And I think that's what it's all about, John.
Oh, it's about those wonderful stories. And there's so many that you have to tell. And I left that experience with such an appreciation for the fact that this wasn't just a movement of the 50s and 60s, as we so often pigeonhole it. Goes back generations. And also just of the amazing role that that women and children played in the movement that folks just weren't are so unaware of. And again, this notion of hundreds and thousands.
That's an important point you just made.
Absolutely.
Because when I see pictures of the movement,
yeah,
most people don't understand that Dr. King brought exactly what he was supposed to bring.
Absolutely.
Selma was already organized. It just needed that catalyst, which was Dr. King. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He brought exactly what he was supposed to bring. And here in Selma, we call it the three M's: money, the media, and motivation.
Right, right.
And without those three M's, there would not have been any change. He brought exactly what he was supposed to bring. Because media, he brought our outside media. Here in Selma, the media was controlled by the good old boys. For years, if the Dallas County Voters League was formed in the 30s and they had been taking action since the 30s, why is there no record? When Dr. King came, the media, the national media, followed him. And whatever we did in Selma was broadcast across the world.
Wow, that's amazing. Hey, Joanne, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We do have a caller on the line. One of the folks who was down in Selma with you wants to weigh in. And actually, we've got word that the rest of our crew has arrived and are patiently waiting. So we'll bring them on after the commercial break. But first, wanted to bring Mary Carger into the conversation. And Mary, you were part of one of the groups that went down to Selma. Is that right? Mary, are you there? Let's see. Mary, are you there?
Oh.
Yes, just a second, Mary. Okay, we're going to have to, I think, get Joanne back on the line. But Mary, are you there? Looks like, actually, I'm going to scramble here and I think go to commercial, and we'll see if we can get both of our guests back. This is Forward Forum here on Madison 1670 The Pulse, and we're going to be back with our special guest, Joanne Bland, on the phone from Selma, Alabama. I'll be hearing from a number of the students who've been part of an exchange that's gone on for several years now between the UW-Madison and Selma. This is Forward Forum 321-1670. Please join in our conversation, and we'll be discussing this for the next through 9 o'clock tonight. Joanne has to leave us a little bit early because she's on her way to on a long trip that includes a visit to Milwaukee, Madison, Beloit, and other places. She does definitely want to exchange some words here with these students who she holds in such high esteem. And we'll be back in Forward Forum in just a moment.
We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing for our lives. We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing for our lives. A land of many colors.
Back to Forward Forum, having a couple of glitches, I guess, left over from Halloween and the board here. So we've lost somebody, but I think we got someone else here online. Is that Joanne, or do we have Mary on?
This is Mary.
Hi, Mary. We're bringing Joanne back on. She'll be here in just a second. But if you don't mind, beginning to share your story a little bit. So you were part of one of the groups that went down to Selma?
Yes, I am. I am a super senior at University of Madison, which means I'm here for 5 years. And I went during my freshman year spring break, which was 2004, and it was just an amazing experience. And I heard from the professor that I went with that Miss Bland was going to be on today, I wanted to call and tell her how much of an impact she's made in my life and in my college life. And right now I'm actually in the process of applying for Teach for America to do something for the community.
Well, that's terrific. But, may I ask which professor that was?
Mary Layoun.
Oh, okay. Oh, sure. Good friend. Ah. Good friend of this program, too.
Yes. but it was, I mean, I have this specific memory of, I worked in the Voting Rights Museum in the archives for the week that we were in Alabama. And I remember finding a picture of Martin Luther King holding a child. And this archives was just amazing. There was so much information. There was so much knowledge in that room. And I remember going through this box and finding this picture stuck to the back of another picture. And it was Martin Luther King. And it just, like, to this day, I still remember what an impact that made on me to find just a Polaroid picture of Martin Luther King holding a baby. And it's just wonderful.
Powerful stuff. You've heard, I imagine, some stories like that before, Joanne?
Just
I
hope I see you when I'm there, because you know so many have come down. I can't put a face on you, and I hate that.
I will be at one of your presentations on campus.
Oh, great!
Depending on my schedule, I know you're doing several, so I will be there.
Well,
I'm
sure
the one you used to make fun of for having the matching bag with my skirt.
Excuse me.
Do that again if you could, Mary.
She used to tease me that I had a purse that matched my skirt.
Oh! I wasn't teasing; it was true.
It's great stuff. Well, Mary, hey, thanks so much for sharing. We want to just bring the rest of our panel into discussion. Do you want to hang on the line for a bit, or?
Sure, I'll stay on.
Okay, great. We joined in studio over the break by Sue Zeski, who is a faculty advisor who's gone down. She's the associate chair of the Communication Arts Department. And Sue has deferred to her panelists for right now, and we'll come back and tell you a little bit more about Sue's experiences in our second hour here. But we're also joined by Charles Hughes and Mobolaji Falomo and Alan Petrovich. Close. Okay. Sorry. Actually, let me start with you, Alan, and we'll go around the table. We've got just about 6 minutes here, but if you could just share some of your memories of Selma.
Well, sure. I'm Charles, but
Charles, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'll get this right. Okay.
I'm currently a graduate student in the history department, and I previous to this.
Boo.
Yes, Ms. Bland. It's so nice to talk to you. I can't wait to see you again. But back in 2001, when I was an undergraduate on this campus in the Afro-American Studies Department, I took part in the first sort of real trip south that that began this series. It was the Freedom Ride 2001 is what it was called. And we met Ms. Bland there and toured the Voting Rights Museum. And, you know, it completely changed my life. It's the reason why I'm in graduate school. It's the reason why I do what I do. And I went again in 2004, and I've been involved with many of the times when she's come up to Madison in the interim. So it's a real thrill to get a chance to talk about her and about Selma.
Okay. Well, why don't you pull that mic close? And
Hello,
what was your experience?
I went as a freshman. And I went with my dorm, Chadbourne Hall, and it was one of the best experiences that I've had in my life. It was really nice for me to really, I felt like I could see what was going on in the movement, because I'm originally from Africa, so I kind of had some knowledge, but not that much. And going there just gave me a fresh view of what it really was like, and meeting and dealing with all the people who walked, and they were called the foot soldiers, who walked that walk. It made me feel like I could actually do something positive in my life. Talking to people who had experiences, there were like older women who would talk to you and tell us, oh, I did this, and oh, I had to go because my mom went. And you just listen to what they did and how much fun they had doing what they did, not feeling like what they were doing was big. But if you look at it now, that their little impact that they felt they made created such a great movement and a huge movement. And it shows that every little single person, no matter how small you feel, can do something great. And that empowered me so much. And I had a great time. And it was fun working in the museum and just putting up pictures and just all the different things, even like a few of us volunteered at the park, and walking up that bridge, up the Mount Pettus Bridge, was empowering because you see and you think about all the people who had to do it and what they went through while they did it.
Oh, wow. Great stuff. Well, let's also hear from Alan. And Alan, can you help me mangle your name?
Petrovich.
Slightly? Petrovich, okay.
Thanks. Hi, Ms. Blend. It's so great to hear your voice again.
Oh, same here. I'm just on the floor.
I actually went down on the same trip Mo did with Chadbourne Residential College 2 years ago over spring break. And, you know, I went into it knowing that I was going to learn a lot more of the history than I had already known. And it still shocked me, all the untold stories that we were able to share from Ms. Bland and everyone else that we met down in Selma and in Birmingham and in Memphis. And it was just amazing seeing the work that they've done to help tell the stories at the museum. And I'm so honored that we had a chance to give back and work. I have great memories of some of the best friends I made on that trip working upstairs in the legal guardian's room. Where. Ms. Bland knows, when we walked in, there were pictures on the walls and not much else. And what we were told was basically that they wanted the room ready to show to people and share the stories of the people who had worked on the legal front as lawyers and as judges, you know, battling for this cause. And we remember just going in and finding out who the people were in the pictures, researching everything we could find. And then probably the hardest thing we did while we were there was shrink all the information that we wanted to share onto little 4x6 cards that we could mount on the walls just to help share a little bit. And I know that we all walked away from that room feeling connected to those people that we couldn't hear from firsthand, but we heard all these wonderful stories. It was just an amazing experience.
You guys are gonna make me cry.
Hey, Joanne, can we get you to stay with us just a few minutes after the news to visit for just a little more, and then we'll let you go so you can get packed and everything?
No. I want to talk to my babies.
Okay, good. If we can get you to stay on the line for a few minutes. We've got just a couple minutes before we go into the news, though, and while we still have Mary on the line, you're hearing, of course, some resonance with your own story. But you were saying this has actually informed some of the choices that you've made since then. Could you talk about how you felt when you came back from Selma and kind of how that propelled you on the path you're on now? Mary, you still there?
Yes, I'm here. I got back. I was a very naive freshman white girl in, you know, one of the nicer dorms on campus, and the impact it made on me just really made me want to make some kind of change. The stories that Ms. Bland told us, it was, I just felt like my main one of the things I took from it was the educational aspect of it and seeing that I could make a difference. And so as a senior, I'm going to try to do Teach for America, which is they put you in a lower income area and you teach in a classroom that may not have the things that other classrooms have that I grew up going to private schools, and these classrooms have almost nothing. And Ms. Bland really instilled this feeling that, you know, we can make a difference. That I remember her specifically saying, you know, the civil rights movement only did 25% of the work that needs to be done, and the rest is up to us. And I really feel like our generation needs to help, you know, change all of these things and help close the educational gap between high income and low income students. And she's just made a huge impact on my life just in that 1 week that I spent with her.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for that wonderful testimony.
Mary, I love you.
Yes. Okay. You are listening to Forward Forum, and our guest is Joanne Bland, and we have several guests in the studio. We'll introduce them coming up again after the 8 o'clock news. Again, discussion is the Selma to Montgomery Bridge that's been built here. This is Forward Forum. We'll be back in just a moment.
WTDY Madison.